member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips to the PC. It is Saturday, the 23rd of January, Anno Domini 2016, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, don't get blues. Here comes the news. I know, we have condoms on the mic now.
Yeah, but no, he also fixed it.
Yeah, he did fix it. I did all kinds of things to him.
Well, this mic here.
Well, because he can put the condom on, now it stays up straight.
That's no lie.
Moving on now.
No, wait a minute. He's got a point.
Yeah.
Because this thing.
Oh.
Let me explain. You're not deep. Throw me in this pit and let it walk away. The main mic that I work off of normally has issues, it sags a lot.
Yeah, the springs are old and weak.
Yeah, and Rob will sit there and adjust it so, you know, it's for his height, which is just about to the ceiling.
Right.
And I like to keep it a little bit higher, but normally it would then sag, and then I turn and wind up poking me in the face.
Right.
Because this way, if I have it a little bit higher, it's because it's a directional mic. I can talk, still see you guys, what's going on, and not get whacked in the face. So,
right.
Yeah, it is staying up there a little bit better, Steve. You're right.
Right. It's not bad. He did a bunch of stuff to him.
Yeah.
In general, they're better off. They now have windscreens on them, so it'll be harder to pop our peas. So it's all good. We're getting what they call
professional
now.
Jeez.
Yeah, exactly.
Are we gonna have to wear shirt and ties now?
Oh no, no.
Okay.
This is radio. We barely have to wear pants.
Unless you stand up.
Unless you stand up. Right, because we do have cameras in the studio now. So yeah. All right, independent antivirus testing lab AV Comparatives works hard all year testing AV suites to let consumers know what to expect from the major service providers. The Austrian organization released its 2015 report on Wednesday, rating 21 major security suites for Windows, with Kaspersky Lab taking the award for product of the year. Kaspersky won top honors for having the best overall performance across a variety of tests, such as real-time protection, file detection, and malware removal. Although Kaspersky won the top spot, it actually tied with Bitdefender, but AV Comparatives rules against awarding a company product of the year 2 years in a row bumped Bitdefender, the 2014 winner, to second place. This is something of a trend for AV Comparatives, as the 2013 product of the year award went to Kaspersky, which is why Bitdefender won in 2014. Basically, they've been volleying the top spot back and forth for a while now. AV Comparatives 2015 roundup includes pretty much every name you've heard of in the world of Windows security suites, and several you've never heard of, including Avast, AVG, Avira, Baidu, Bitdefender, BullGuard, Emisoft, eScan, eSat, Fortinet, F-Secure, Kaspersky Lab, LavaSoft, McAfee, Microsoft, Panda, QuickHeel, Sophos, Tencent, ThreatTrack, vPray, and Trend Micro. In addition to Product of the Year, AV Comparatives also handed out awards for performance in specific situations. Things like real-world protection, which went jointly to Bitdefender and Kaspersky Labs. Lowest false positives, believe it or not, went to Microsoft. Speed performance went to Avast. Malware removal award went to Kaspersky Lab. So what's this impact for you at home? Well, it probably doesn't matter to you what awards a security suite wins. AV Comparatives annual summary is still a good resource. First, it tells you that Kaspersky and Bitdefender are probably great choices if you're looking for a solid security suite. It can also help you if you want to see how your security suite stacks up against the competition. Anyone sticking with Microsoft's free Defender, for example, can see it's got a pretty standard score across the board. That means it works fine, but could stand to improve its performance compared to the competition. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Kaspersky and Bitdefender, best AV of 2015. Your choices are, I don't use either, but I will now. I don't use either and won't switch. And, you still need antivirus? How quaint. That last choice, by the way, is only for users of Chromebooks. So far, the number one choice is I don't use either and won't switch, followed by, oh, you still need antivirus, how quaint, followed by woohoo, and I don't use either, but I will now. And so far, 22 of you have voted. I hope more of you will vote soon. And of course, I know you'll have more to say about this, so you can join us in the forums. Scroll down on the right and you'll see fascinating stuff. The first choice is the forums. The second forum under that list is the poll. And so far we've got five, I believe it is, five people who have said something in there. And then, of course, you can come back and join us. Give us a call, too, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. In general, this was pretty much Windows-centric. You know, they didn't do anything for the Mac or for Linux or, well, anything except for Windows. But it's Windows people who get hit the hardest. Macs are pretty close behind, but this was specifically Windows-centric.
We've had a surge in Mac malware in the last couple of weeks.
Yep.
We're getting three or four machines in a day getting hit by malware. And there's no way to stop it because it's coming from an ad on a website.
Yep.
And so you can block the ads. But then a lot of websites don't work if you block the ads.
Well,
so the advertising industry as a whole is too automated, so a bad guy can buy an ad, you know, three levels deep and it shows up on Facebook.
Yep.
So they need to better police their own ads.
Well, and Google has an entire division that does nothing but police the ads.
Yeah.
And it's still not enough.
Yeah.
So you can imagine how many ads they do in a single day. And it's a fairly huge industry. And, of course, part of the problem is that Mac, there are still a lot of awfully smug Mac people who don't believe they need any sort of antivirus and consequently get hit.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the antiviruses and anti-malwares usually can't stop a fake ad.
Right.
But when the ad downloads and asks you to install additional adware, then it can stop it.
Right.
But a lot of the fake ads now are putting up. So we were talking about in things in the past that have changed. Pop-ups used to be a big problem. Until all the browsers put in pop-up blockers. So now the ads are pop-unders. Or the latest thing is it's a dialog box. It actually, you know, something opens up what looks like a window, but it's what we call a dialog box. It wants to have a dialogue with you.
Right.
To ask you something, and you have to hit OK. So the latest thing now is they make this dialog box with the OK button off the bottom of the screen. So
right.
You can't reach it. Sometimes if you hit return, it will activate the OK button, but then it just comes back again.
Right.
And so that's an ad, that's a feature of the browser that an anti-program can't stop.
Right.
And so the browsers are going to have to update themselves to be more aware of that. And as I said, the ad industry is going to have to update themselves to be more aware of bad ads. But it's too automated. I was talking about this with my boss. Would you stop someone from giving you money that wants to give you money? So the bad guys are giving ad agencies money. They don't know they're bad.
Right.
So sure.
Well, and in addition to that, we have things like, for example, Forbes magazine.
Mm-hmm.
You've been there and you've seen it says, you know, they show you a quote and then they give you 3 seconds before they take you to the site. Well, for a while they were saying, oh, you have an ad blocker on. You can't go to our site.
Yeah.
So if you turned off the ad blocker, the very first thing you got was a pop-under that gave you a virus.
Right. And so websites that are blocked that will prevent you from running ad blockers are still serving malicious ads and malicious and viruses in the ads.
Yep.
That's very frustrating. And as of 2002, the latest numbers available, Google is serving 30 billion ad impressions a day.
Yeah, and that was back 10 years, 15 years, 12 years ago.
Yeah. Well, so they would need a billion people to look at the ads.
Well, that's exactly
it. In order to make sure they're all good.
And, you know, God knows they've got automation up the patoot, but even so, a lot of the new stuff slips by. So, there's a bunch of stuff that needs to be looked at. All right. To the phones, Robin. Our first caller is Carl from Pottstown, PA. Hi, Carl. What's up?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. You?
Pretty good. I'm pretty much snowed in here, but that's okay.
Yeah, I bet you are, and it's going to get worse, isn't it?
I have a question about a cell phone. I have a friend who's living in a retirement home. He's almost bedridden. He has a hard time getting out of the bed and into the wheelchair. And he has a cell phone. I believe it's a track phone. And because of the poor cell phone, you know, 3G and 4G reception, his phone won't work very well. However, the entire building is equipped with Wi-Fi. And I have two questions. Number one, is there some way he could program his track phone to use the Wi-Fi connection to make and receive phone calls instead of the 3G or 4G network? And second, if not, he has a laptop. Could he use Skype in order to do that? Because, you know, he's pretty much isolated. The only contact he has with the outside world is a cell phone, which is not working right now.
Right. Well, you can certainly do all kinds of things with Skype. He can make calls with Skype. He can also do that with Google Hangouts and a couple of other products.
Yeah, Google Hangouts is currently free in North America. With Skype, if you want to call a telephone number, you have to pay. It's not very much, but it may be what he's paying for his track phone. There are some phones, and track phone among them, there are some phones, and it's more the carrier that will allow you to do Wi-Fi calling. It's a feature that they put on their brag list now.
Right.
So that when you're in a Wi-Fi network, it can do, in essence, a voice over IP, uses your Wi-Fi to make a telephone call. So if he looks up his exact model track phone, and his carrier, he may be able to see if that phone has a Wi-Fi calling feature on it.
But it's by phone, so, you know, I know the LG 840G does it. There are a couple of others, but and you still pay for minutes, by the way. They're not gonna take away their ability to charge you for additional minutes at some later point. But you can, depending on the model of phone and the particular carrier, you can use Wi-Fi calling over a cell phone. In addition to that, there's things like Google Fi, which does the same thing. It's a phone you get from Google.
A traditional phone rather than a computer phone.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it's a cell phone.
Right. It's a traditional cell phone.
It's not a computer phone like
Hangouts or Skype.
Right.
Which you could do on a smartphone without a phone, so like the iPod Touch or iPod, that's what you call yours.
Right, I call mine an iPod.
Right, an Android phone without phone service, you can use Google Hangouts or Skype.
It's like an iPod, only I call it the iPod because it's Android, right.
There's no cellular service built into the device, but it can still make telephone calls over the internet.
But yes, track phone does do it, but you have to talk to the Hi, how are you? You have to talk to the specific carrier. Still there?
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that answers the question. I'll pass that along, and I'm going to give him as much help as I can to set something up like that.
Yep.
Yeah, excellent.
Some of the bigger companies, I know AT&T does, they'll put a micro cell tower in your house, which basically looks like a big modem. And so it generates a cell signal, and it connects to your internet service, so you can get better cell reception in your house. They have their own prices and fee structures for that. And again, that's by carrier. We'll do that.
But easiest would probably be just check with the carrier and the phone, particular phone you have, and see if they'll do Wi-Fi calling. And if so, you're done.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Good luck. Let us know.
All right, I will. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks. I love that he's helping a friend in a retirement home. I think that's great.
I found an updated estimate of ad impressions per day. So in 2012, 5 years ago, it was 30 billion. Today, it's 172 billion.
172 billion ad impressions per day. Per day.
Per day. And that doesn't even
I get a couple of dozen of those myself.
Yeah. So, and that's according to the Direct Marketing Association. So who knows how many ad networks they actually track.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. And you, it is 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. And what better thing to do on a cold and windy Saturday afternoon? It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we again reach out long, long beyond our our coverage area for the radio station. And we're going to talk to Tim in Columbus, Ohio. How are things in Columbus, Tim?
It's clear. It's about 25.
All right.
No snow.
No snow? We hate you, Tim. Next caller. Go ahead, Tim. What's up?
Okay. My wife has a laptop she bought last year. She's got version 10 on it, on Windows 10.
Yep.
We have a desktop downstairs that's 2 years old. And it's got Windows 7. What must we consider? And there's a lot of promo for upgrading to Windows 10. What must we consider on upgrading the desktop that we have downstairs?
There's two really important things and one less important thing. Super important is the speed of the system and how much RAM you have. Mm. The less important thing is how much disk space you have. Free. So you want at least 4 gigs of RAM. Certainly more is better.
Yes, more.
How much you got in that desktop?
I believe it's 4.
That's fine.
Yeah.
You can certainly run with that. I've got a laptop that runs with that and it runs just fine. If you're going to do a whole lot of high end stuff, you might want to go higher, but for the average person, 4 gig is fine. In terms of speed, you want at least an i5, if not an i7, running somewhere close to 2 gigahertz. More, again, of course, is better. But the other thing is how much disk space you have, because you need somewhere around 60 gig, depending, you know, every single person I've talked to, Microsoft downloaded a different amount to their hard drive. The biggest I've seen is 60 gig. The average is actually closer to 30 or even almost 20. But I tell people, you know, you got to have 60 gig free just in case. And for most people, that's also not a problem because disk drives are so huge these days. But once you've done that, you should be good to go.
On the other side, you have to check what software you're running.
Yes. Right.
Especially if it's older versions of programs, say more than 2 or 3 years old, check with them to see if there's an update or if it's compatible with Windows 10.
Yeah, because they even said, my daughter just ran into this past week. She wound up going ahead and going to Windows 10. It loaded and everything else okay. And the printer they had just purchased said, oh, yeah, it should work with Windows 10. No problem. Guess what? It didn't. It didn't want to work for beans. So she had to literally strip out what she had in there, go back to Windows 7, and the printer's working fine. So you've got to really do your homework and just don't see, you know, I'm getting to the point where now folks will sit there, oh, yeah, it should work. Check if there's any reviews or anything else. See what people are saying, whether this is actually working with the particular hardware and software.
And, of course, the good news is that you still, right now at least, you still have time. If it doesn't work, test everything. And if it doesn't work, you can go back to Windows 7.
Have a backup.
All right.
Does everybody have to go to Windows 10?
Eventually, yes. Everybody will be going to Windows 10. Microsoft has stated that eventually Windows 10 will be the only version of Windows they will sell and that will be available and they will support, and everybody will be automatically upgraded to Windows 10.
So if you don't want Windows 10, you have to disconnect from the internet because it will upgrade you automatically.
Yep. Yep.
Eventually. But right now, they haven't said when, but they
well, that's why,
they said that's coming.
And that's why I've said right along, matter of fact, I was just showing Nick this one Acer Chromebook. Because as of next month, I want to unplug my Windows 7 machine because it works fine. I love Windows 7, and the programs that I have and the printers and everything else works fantastic with it. And I'm just going to go ahead and get a Chromebook because basically I use the internet for, you know, surfing for emails and checking things and all that type of stuff. I can use Google Chrome, Docs. I can use Google Docs, rather. All the photos are saved up on Google Photos, free of charge. So everything's right there. And this way, because after Windows 10, he's given to you free now. Now, here's the thing, folks. Yeah. I was born at night, just not last night. And the thing of it is yes, he's given it to me free this year. But then next year, he's going to be tapping on your door and saying, tell you what, pay me this fee, or you've got X amount of days and I'm shutting you down. And guess what? There's not a thing you can do about it, because either you pay the fee or you got to go to Ubuntu or something else. So he is going to have full control of your computer.
Yep.
Okay.
Hear me now and remember me later.
Frustrating.
Yep. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.
All right, and stay warm and dry.
There's to raise programs, so you guys follow, and we've been following you guys for years.
Love to hear that. Tell everybody in Columbus.
Yeah, please pass the word down there if you can, and get it out there.
Thank you very much.
All right, have a great day.
Thanks, Tim. Bye bye.
There is a Windows compatibility advisor. I'm posting a link now. If you have that Get Windows 10 icon in your system tray, you can right click on it, and one of the options is check my PC, and it will check your major drivers and software to see if they're compatible or not.
Right.
Doesn't necessarily mean other things aren't, but at least
it's a Microsoft product, so it will only check Microsoft products.
Yeah, and it's just a small list of stuff that they're aware of.
Yeah.
So
that they care about, frankly.
Yeah,
only the Microsoft stuff.
Yeah, and Quicken or any of these other programs that you might be using, specialty programs, print drivers or anything else.
They don't care.
No, they could care less. You know, burning software, say, for your CDs or whatever.
Right.
They're just not going to really.
They don't care.
Oh, well, too bad.
They don't care.
But like I said, that's still disturbing to me. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, go
but
ahead.
It still disturbs me. That, you know, and we've been saying, you can see the handwriting on the wall. He's giving it to him for free now. And folks say, oh, great, free operating system. And then, mark my words, next year at this time, we're going to hear the whining and crying.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of a sudden, they're getting a notice that Microsoft wants, say, $125.
Per year.
Per year.
Because it's a subscription now.
It's a subscription, and either you pay it or forget it. You don't get to continue on using it like you can Windows 7 and all these others now.
I had a thought on that, too. You may not be able to disconnect from the internet and keep using Windows 7, because eventually the Windows Genuine Advantage is going to run.
Yeah.
And if it can't talk to Microsoft server, it's going to assume you're a thief and stop Windows from working.
Yep, that's right. I didn't think of that. You're absolutely right.
So you got to plug it in, make sure it works.
Oh, well, Dave.
Yeah, plug it in, make sure WGA works, and then unplug it before Windows 10 installs.
Right. it's a very tough thing. Microsoft wants you to be on Windows 10, and they want you eventually to pay for it.
It's the best thing for them and their developers, if you're all running the same OS.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
Nothing to do with you.
I suspect in a year or so, I will be adding to the security tango with the get off Windows rumba. Or whatever I'm going to call it, which is, here's how you put all of your documents in Google Docs.
Yeah.
And convert them to Google Docs format.
How you can start up a Google Photo.
Right.
And here's the other thing, folks, and I've done this for a number of folks, and even my girlfriend. I set her up on Google Photo. So anything 16.1K or less.
Megs.
It's got to be less than megs. Yes.
Megs.
Megs less than that, it's up there, and you can store photos for free.
Yep.
So it's got to be less than that. So your average camera, if you sit there and take it at average, it doesn't have to be high quality. Even if you do average, you could take all the photos from your phone or from your camera. If they're just average use, you could store literally thousands and thousands of photo up there for your charge.
Yep.
And I could be on my laptop. I could be on my phone. It doesn't matter. I could go to a friend's computer, log on, get in there, and show them the photos. Because they're available no matter where you go. Same with documents, spreadsheets, everything. It's all up there in the Google Cloud. And it's safe. You don't have to worry about a CD going bad, or it's skipping, or scratching, or anything else, or a hard drive failing.
Yep.
And the folks sitting there say, oh, I meant to save that. Well, you know what? If you set it up on the cloud, you don't have to worry about that now. It's already there. You know, it's just a nice feature. And I'm slowly seeing more and more folks take advantage of it. And I wish more and more would.
Yep.
Because it'd be less heartache.
I have just shy of a gigabyte of photos in Google Photos. It doesn't really count against my storage.
But it's 16.1 megapixels, is it?
16 megapixels, yeah.
Yeah, 16.1 megapixels, so if it's less of that.
Right, so what I did was I set my phone's resolution to 16 megapixels.
Yeah.
So all the photos that go up are free.
Yeah.
And I've got tens of thousands of photos up there already.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Because I also uploaded a whole bunch that I had and said, go ahead, reduce them to the free size. So I've got my set that I keep backed up here on Earth.
Yeah.
And then the ones that I can look at every day, which I'm looking at them on a computer screen anyway. So the fact that they're slightly lower resolution is completely unnoticeable to me. I keep those in the cloud, and then I can look at them on my phone or my tablet or my Chromebook or my laptop or my desktop or give access to somebody else, and it all works out.
I have a 30-terabyte subscription if you need 30 terabytes of disk space.
Oh, geez, Louis.
And there are people who do.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it.
By the way.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, all my photos, I mean, I've got tons from my woodworking and everything else. I'm in the process of slowly loading those all up to iPhoto.
Yep.
And putting them up there. And it's like, so what? My hard drive crashes? No biggie. Even in the backup, the Google Drive. I've got, my registry for my QuickKid, all that stuff is all backed up.
One thing to keep in mind is these photos syncing is a sync. It's not a backup. So if you delete a photo, it's gone. If you edit a photo badly, it's gone.
Right.
So you still need to have a backup copy of all your stuff just in case.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Who was it?
Well, that's where it's better. If you're going to play around with, say, a photo,
yeah,
download it to your machine. Put it down on your machine.
Write it locally.
Do it locally, and then you could rename it. Rename it. Play around with it. Then that way the original isn't touched.
Right.
So if you put if it's Joe 1, just put Joe 1A.
Right.
Rename it that way.
I have a total storage of 17 gigabytes of my 15 gig free. Because they had an offer where if you did, they had a promotion, and I got an extra 2 gig.
And 15 gigs free is the most of any of the services I'm aware of.
Right, but if you wanted 100 gig, it's only $2 a month. It's less than $25 a year for a gigabyte, 100 gigabytes of disk space up on the web. That's a ridiculously low amount of money. And of course, you can edit your photos. There's applications online that do 99% of what Photoshop does, and they're free. I mean, I have a friend who runs an entire web business, including editing photos, editing sound, editing video, and he does it all out of a Chromebook because he's found tools online, 99% of which are free because he's cheaper even than I, to do that stuff with. So, when people say, well, it's a limited, Chromebooks are limited, no, they're not.
Well, they are limited. They have a really, really high limit.
Right. Yes, they are limited. I cannot sit on one and fly to Mars. So there is a limit there.
Darn it, Google.
Doggone you, Google.
When are you going to release my Mars rover?
Obama.
Yeah.
all right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis. From somewhere called Rochester, New York. I don't even know where the heck that is. Hiya, Dennis. How's it going?
Good. I have not downloaded Windows 10 yet. I've got Windows 7 on my desktop.
Yep.
I previously called to find out how to do a disk, and I know that's, you got to have a link to it somewhere, but that's not my question today. My question is, my Windows 7 is working perfectly. And so what if I cloned what I've got to an external drive and then with the intention of never going on the internet with that particular external drive using Windows 7 and then downloaded Windows 10 to my desktop, and then when I wanted to use my programs that I knew that would not work on Windows 10, I could just go to the external drive and use Windows 7. Could I do that? Would that work? Or
it's delicate to do dual booting Windows to Windows. It's doable, but it's a little finicky to get it right. If you do get it right, you'll be fine.
Yeah, if your BIOS will let you pick which drive to boot from, that makes it a lot easier than trying to load a bootloader.
Load a bootloader.
Oh, did you hear about the bug in Grub?
No.
If you hit So Grub is a common bootloader for switching between Windows and Linux.
Well, same there. Let's finish his question first. So we again run into the problem that Steve brought up today. Very brilliant idea. Windows has something called the Windows. I don't know how you found
it. It's so unlike me.
It is. I don't know what that's about. With Windows Genuine Advantage, every once in a while in the background, Windows goes through your system and says, essentially, do you deserve to be running this copy of Windows?
Mm-hmm.
And it reports that back to Windows, to Microsoft. So at some point, the Windows Genuine Advantage, if it cannot make contact with Microsoft servers.
Which has happened when their servers have been down.
Right.
And then suddenly everyone can't run Windows.
Right. Windows will stop working.
Hmm.
And that will happen with Windows 7 as well at some point. So Dave's brilliant ideas, right down the tubes.
So I know you're going to commercial. So even if I keep Windows 7 as a external, and at some point, even though I'm not on the internet, it may try to look for the internet, and
yes,
if you can, it's going to stop. Is that what
yes?
You're okay. All right. Thank you.
Yep. We're going to take a quick break. Back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco. You. 40 minutes after the hour. Soundbites member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are soundbites. Yes, we have snow, we have rain, we have thunder, we have clouds, we have sun, we have rain of frogs, we have whatever
Rochester.
It takes.
Yeah,
exactly.
Welcome home.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Mark, how are you?
Happy winter afternoon to you.
It's a beautiful day to be indoors, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Commenting on your observation of Microsoft and what they're probably going to do with Windows 10.
Yep.
Being that it's Microsoft and people just aren't used to paying subscriptions to them as they are to, like, antivirus and other services.
Right.
I think it's going to fail miserably.
Well, define fail.
Yeah.
People are going to be really angry about it, but most people don't understand they have alternatives.
Yeah, most of them don't know. What other choices do they have? They only know Windows.
I've kind of likened it to the gas prices. You grumble about how gas is getting, but you still pay it.
Right, right. Not now. Now it's under $2. But when it was $4, we complained, but we still paid $4.
I just have this feeling that people are going to grumble, complain, and they're going to force them to look for alternatives because people inherently don't like Microsoft.
Part of the reason we think Microsoft is moving to a subscription model is people aren't upgrading Windows often enough. So they're losing a revenue stream because people don't upgrade often enough. So the theory is, and a lot of software companies have started doing this, Adobe, one of the big ones in the creative world, if you go to a lower subscription fee, you know, $10 a month, people are more likely to pay it than they would pay, you know, $200 or $300 a year for an upgrade.
Particularly if you say to them, it's $10 a month, but if you pay by the year, you get 2 months free.
Yeah.
So you pay $100 a year. Wow, that's a deal. I'm saving $40.
Yeah.
$20.
And especially if they give you multiple licenses. So Microsoft Office 365 is a great example of their licensing deal. And that's sort of what we're hoping they go with Windows. For $99 a year, you get 5 computers, 5 tablets, and 5 phones. So $100 a year for an entire family's devices.
That's not a bad deal.
And so maybe they'll do the same thing for Windows.
They may work.
Yeah.
But I think if they do this, you know, you pay $130 a year for this computer, and you've got 3 computers in the house, people are going to be up in arms. And you'd be surprised. You know, we do realize how cheap people are where they can pay for software. Even though it's free, they don't.
Yeah. Right, right, right.
You know,
you're right. I think you're absolutely right. But you also have to take into account inertia.
Inertia is a big deal.
And the fact that people don't understand they have alternatives. Everybody understands that the Mac is an alternative, but they see the Mac, and I'm not going to get into this argument, but they see the Mac as more expensive. Right? They see it as a more expensive. They see it as a bijou alternative. It's a more expensive. It's higher end. It's blah, 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 blah. All I want is a program that works. Also, there's the inertia of, I know Windows. I understand Windows. I can use Windows.
And that argument is almost becoming, what's the right word? Not a good argument anymore, because Windows 10 is so different. It's not as different from Windows 7 as Windows 8 was, but it is different. It's harder to find where things are if you're used to it now. And so that was Apple's marketing plan when Vista was a failure. You got to learn something new anyway. If you upgrade Windows, you might as well switch to a Mac. And Linux has, right. Has some of the Linux distros have done that too.
Right.
Since you're going to have to learn it new anyway. It's all the operating systems work, say, 95% the same. It's that little bit at the end, and some words are different between systems. Once you get into it, it's not necessarily that hard to switch between them.
Right. And I tell people all the time, they look at my Chromebook and go, wow, that's inexpensive. It's great. It does everything you need to do. But I really, I can't get one. Well, why can't you? Well, what if I ever need to run Photoshop? Okay. A, there are alternatives, and B, how long have you been using a computer, and how many times have you needed Photoshop? Well, never. Okay, but just case you need it, you'd rather pay $700 or $800 for a laptop than $200 for a laptop.
Right.
Okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Good for you. Good for you.
Inertia.
It's inertia.
You know, and people fail to remember that most things, if you can't find it, you Google it, you're going to find it. You're going to say, geez, you know, how do I get here? I'm not used to it here. Well, go into Google, and 9 out of 10 times you're going to find what you're looking for, you know.
Yeah.
Google has so many things under their hood to do.
You know.
Yeah, and half the time when I'm using a Windows 10 machine and I don't know how to get to where I want to go, I use the Windows search.
Yep.
Yeah, so where do they move control panels to? Because it's not in the Apple menu, or the Apple menu, the Windows menu anymore. All right, I'll hit the icon and control, and it opens up for me.
Yep.
Well, I guess it's going to be interesting to find out how smoothly this runs for them and what kind of flack they're going to get for it. Because, like I said, people just aren't used to a subscription model for an operating system.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. People are going to complain like mad, but they're just going to still do it.
You know, and this brings up another question. Now the maker of the computer, they're paying for the operating system, and then you got to pay to use it?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a nice double dip, isn't it?
Well, and you mentioned the virus subscriptions. In the early days, virus antivirus programs were not subscriptions. You paid your $50 and it worked forever, and it updated forever.
Right.
And then some company, probably Symantec,
it was
decided that only works for a year, and then you got to buy a subscription again. And of course, the subscription fees are less than the whole new program costs in most cases. So it's a deal for the consumers. But then when you get a antivirus trial with your computer that only runs for 30 days, then you buy a new version. So people have become used to that over the last couple of years.
But I still get people who say,
right.
No, I won't buy it. There's got to be a free one I can use. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you want a free operating system, it's Linux or it's Chromebook. You know, if you want a system that's going to cost you money, it's Windows. You can get a Mac somewhere in the middle of that. They're free now, aren't they?
Well, the OS comes free with the computer, and the upgrades are free as well.
Right now.
Right. And that's one advantage that Apple has by making the hardware and the software, where you buy a computer from Dell had to pay Microsoft to get the OS.
Right.
So maybe there'll be a version where you buy the hardware from Dell, and then when you first turn it on, you have to pay for your Microsoft subscription.
In which case, theoretically,
that'll make the computer prices lower.
No, it won't.
The initial price will get. Maybe
no, it lower. Won't.
Yeah. No.
No, it won't.
It could.
It could, certainly.
But not likely.
Yeah.
I agree. It's not going to be lower. If they can make more money, they're going to make more money.
The margins are so small now.
For them.
Yeah, margins are so small now. That's why computer companies accept free trial stuff.
Right.
Because that company paid them to put it on the machine.
Right. If they can get an extra $30 out of every machine, they've double their margin.
I said, it's true with anything.
Yep.
And I've heard this phrase used a number of times. It's whatever the market will bear.
That's exactly right. But Mark, I think you're absolutely right. I think we're going to see chaos in the next year. The minute Microsoft says you have to pay for the operating system. And what's really going to happen is people are going to go, nobody told me. Really? Oh, we're talking about it now.
Yeah, it's been in all the industry news for the past year.
Right.
And sometimes people griping and complaining and getting on them, look how it worked well for Time Warner. They never did implement that data cap.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, they made it a voluntary one. You want to pay less.
We'll see what happens when
the data cap,
Charter takes over.
The data cap never came because so many people were up in arms against it.
Right. And they were organized by the great Phil Dampier. Right. So why
do other cities have caps? Because they didn't have Phil.
Yep.
But yeah, exactly.
It can't be completely. Phil's a great guy, but it can't be completely that.
Yeah, really.
That's a great sight.
We all love Phil, but he sinks in water like the rest of us. Yeah.
Well, thanks for letting me put my two cents in.
No, thank you, Mark. We appreciate it. And Phil will actually listen to the show while he's jogging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't get a chance to call in and defend himself and admit that it is all him.
And we hear stories, mostly on Stop the Cap, that other cities that do have caps, sometimes there's a cap, but it's not enforced. Sometimes there's a cap that is enforced. and you get an email that you're close to your limit and you're not sure why. Cloud backup services are now becoming the big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm afraid of is in the cell phone industry, we are used to data caps and paying by the gigabyte on our cell phone. And that's what
I'm still not used to it and I hate it.
Well, yeah, we hate it, but what we live with it.
Same thing. Yeah.
So
we complain, but we do it.
Yeah, and that's what the hardline internet companies are looking at, that well, they're used to doing it for their phones, we can start putting a cap on it and start charging you more for landline internet. And that's sort of a dangerous precedent to have.
Right. And we'll see. We'll see what the industry trend happens. Now we're seeing a lot of other people saying, unlimited data.
Mm-hmm.
Move to us, you get unlimited data. Yeah. Yeah, it's not all high-speed data. You'll see the little thing. First 27 gigs are at 4G, and then it drops to 3G. Or the first 1 gig.
Mm-hmm.
Is it 4G? Excuse me?
Mm-hmm.
But
read the fine print.
And a lot of the cell phone plans now have thrown in free minutes. So you used to pay for a minute plan, a text plan, and a data plan. And then texting went free, unlimited text for free. And now most of the plans have unlimited minutes.
Yeah.
Because people don't make phone calls anymore.
That's right.
It's all data. And so the companies have realized that's where the money is. So they can charge you $10 a gig for data.
Right. And yet the fact is it's all data.
Yeah.
You know, all of it is the same type of traffic. But they by breaking it out artificially, they can charge us different rates for different things. And I think we will see, people will I think Mark is completely right. People are going to complain to high heaven about what Microsoft is doing in terms of the charge, the yearly charge for Windows. But they'll pay it because they are afraid to try something new. New is scary.
They'll skip it until the computer says, I'm going to not run now until you pay.
Right. And then they'll pay and complain.
It's like when the Windows Genuine Advantage times out and locks your computer down, the only thing you can open is Internet Explorer to go to the Microsoft website to renew.
Yep.
Yeah. So when that happens and the only thing you can do is go to the page and pay your renewal fee, then you have to make a decision. And by then, it's going to be, I'm going to have to pay because I can't get back into my computer.
And we're going to see person after person after person calling and saying, I'm locked out of my computer. What do I do?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And we will say to them, we've been saying for a year, make backups.
Mm-hmm.
And they will say, well, I meant to.
Yeah.
I intended to.
And we've given you more options where it can happen automatically. It can sync with Google utilities, whether it's Google Drive, Google Photos, or, so much out there. We're giving you the tools. The only thing is we can't do it for you.
I'll tell you what, 99% of what I do now is all on Google's cloud, which means I don't worry about backups like I used to. Mm. I mean, I'm one of those belt and suspenders guys. I've talked about this before. If I don't have a minimum of two backups and I feel safer with three,
yep.
right? But now I write a document and I'll make a copy, but it's I write it on Google's Drive and it stays on Google's Drive and they back it up on Google's Drive. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I back up my stuff. There's the Google Takeout, which I preferred the early name, the Data Liberation Front. And you can download everything from them or anything you want. And so, you know, I do that regularly, but I don't have to because, yes, Google could have a crash and blah, 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 blah. But I actually know the people who do a lot of that stuff, and they have multiple backups of multiple backups. They're far more paranoid than even I am.
And they are very proud of their uptime rating on how often they stay up.
Yep. So, you know, if you have no backups, I kind of don't have a lot of sympathy for you anymore. You can always back things up to thumb drives or to an external hard drive or to the web or put it on CD or whatever you want to do with it. And it only takes a few minutes. And you're done, and now you have a backup. And doing that with regularity is part of you know, being an adult who owns a computer. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. Well, it's a slightly longer break. You've wasted an entire hour of your life with us. You get to do it again in a few minutes. We're going to take a slightly longer break, and then we'll be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You continue for no discernible reason to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. Whether you like it or not, we are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a little bit.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. Glad you could stick around. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And our next caller is Vic from around Kuwait, New York. Hiya, Vic. What's up?
Well, my knowledge of smartphones is like Sergeant Schultz. I know nothing.
I know nothing.
So, that being said, now my wife is on Weight Watchers, and on the site, they did a new site, and she's having a hard time navigating. And we don't have the smartphones yet. We are getting them. But she was told at her meeting this morning that you can't use Android. Now, what exactly is that in reference to a smartphone?
Android is one of the operating systems that smartphones can run. There are three main ones. Well, there are two main ones in Windows.
There's and BlackBerry.
And BlackBerry.
There are two main ones.
There are two main ones. Android, which is from Google, and iOS, which is from Apple. So if you get an iPhone, you will be running iOS. If you get a Google-type phone, you will probably be running Android as the operating system.
And then there are some phones that run Windows OS, and then some phones that run BlackBerry OS.
Right. And then there are a couple of others that mostly don't run in America. The big difference, they're very similar. I mean, you can do 99% of the same thing on all of them. The big difference is that some people have only written apps for one or the other. So, for example, Weight Watchers might be one of them. I don't know. I haven't looked.
There is a Weight Watchers app for Android. It may not be from Weight Watchers itself. No, it is. So sometimes a company will make their own app, and sometimes a third-party person will make an app for that service. So Weight Watchers does have their own Android app, so I'm not sure why they told you it wouldn't work on Android.
So when we do go get the smartphones, we'll just to let them know that we can't get an Android, and then they'll direct us to all the other different kinds like you just said then.
Right. Both the Android folks and the iOS folks have their own application store. On iOS, the Apple people call theirs the App Store. And on Google, it's called the Play Store. So you can go to the Play Store, for example. I'm an Android guy. So I go to the Play Store, and I can get apps or movies or music or, you know, whatever. And the same if I were and Steve is an Apple guy. So he goes to the App Store to get all the same stuff. And like I said, you will find some things that are exclusive to one or the other, but the vast majority of everything is available on both platforms.
Well, thank you very much, Nick.
Yeah, absolutely. The big difference is, what is your world? If you're in the Apple ecosystem, if you have a MacBook and an iPad and everything else, then perhaps you want to go with the iPhone and live in the App Store in the Apple world. If you've got a Windows machine and you don't have a smartphone, maybe you want to go with Google. Maybe you want to go with Windows. Windows really has a much, much, much lower number of things out for it, much lower number of apps. But Android and iOS have fairly equivalent numbers. In terms of usable apps. Yeah. I mean, there's about 60,000 fart apps in the App Store that the Android people don't have. So we don't count those. In terms of usable apps, they're about equal.
Well, we'll know, I guess, when we go get our smartphones. We'll make sure.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you again, guys.
All right. Good luck. Have fun.
And sometimes a company will have different apps that do different things. I'm looking at the Weight Watchers app. My wife just started Weight Watchers, too. They gave her a little tiny pocket computer for doing the points. And so Weight Watchers Kitchen Companion app, which has recipes and plan-friendly cooking ideas, is only available for Apple devices in the iOS on the App Store. The regular Weight Watchers mobile and their Simple Start is available for both Apple and Google. And then their point calculator is also available for BlackBerry and Windows Phone.
There you go.
So it's kind of ironic. When a company wants to make an app, they have to decide which platform to go first. And so quite often they go iPhone first because it's interesting. You make the most money on an iPhone app. You can reach more people on a Google, on an Android app.
Right.
And then there's also BlackBerry and Windows. So that tends to be the order they get developed.
Now, it's interesting. I don't see iOS.
Right, don't say iOS on that points calculator. So
BlackBerry, though. How many folks still play around with BlackBerry? Though?
There are still a bunch of people who use it. It's still...
Really? That's got to be slowly dying.
Well, here's the thing.
Well, the new BlackBerry Priv.
The BlackBerry has their own web, their own servers.
Hmm.
So if I'm a large enough organization, I can set up my own BlackBerry server, and that means my email in particular doesn't go to anybody else, so it's more secure. So that's why so many government or organizations still use BlackBerries, because they control the servers.
Gotcha.
A lot of private organizations do the same. So BlackBerry really is out there for a lot of places, but in a corporate environment, not in a personal environment.
And some of that goes back to the inertia we've talked about, that BlackBerry was huge 10 years ago.
Right.
And most businesses, most governments, and most people would often use a BlackBerry phone. And then Apple disrupted that market with the iPhone in 2007, was it?
Right.
And then a couple of years later, Google disrupted again with Android phone.
Right.
And over 3 or 4 years, BlackBerry went from 100% to, you know, what, 4%, 5%?
Yeah, I have to say, they're down to... Yeah. Very low numbers.
And also, in addition to that, so many companies say, look, the BlackBerry phone is for work only, so you can't get personal calls on it. So then people will carry two phones.
Mm-hmm.
So now they have either an Android phone or an iOS phone, and they are talking more about that, because now you can get more apps for that. You can get more, you know, stuff that does cooler things.
Mm-hmm.
But for business, they're sending texts and making phone calls on a BlackBerry phone, which really has kind of the implication of being a kind of a 21st century pager.
Yeah.
You know, lots of people had pagers for work and phones for themselves. Not smartphones, nice. Just cell phones, flip phones.
Mm-hmm.
I like this headline. It will soon be impossible for BlackBerry to lose any more market share.
Yeah. Because they're already
at 0.4%.
Yeah. Oh, so when you said 4%, you were
way high.
100% high.
That was a decimal point off.
Yeah. just one order of magnitude off. Yeah, but so there are, you know, which, and people talk all the time about which one is better. You know what? Neither one is better.
No, it's whatever your
it's whatever works
your
for
needs.
You. Right. Now my daughter is Apple all the way. She has a MacBook, she has an iPad, she has an iPhone, and that makes her happy. All the stuff works together, everything works great. I'm a Linux guy and I have an Android phone and Chromebook and all like that stuff. So, and I'm perfectly happy. So it doesn't really matter. And oh, by the way, almost always you can get the same set of applications. So let's say you have an Android watch. Well, there's a program called Android Wear that you put on your Android phone to talk to your Android watch. Guess what? Android Wear app is available for iOS too. So if you wanted to get an Android watch instead of an Apple watch, it would work with your iPhone. So there's, you know, there's almost nothing of any major import that is only available on one platform. So you really have whatever you want to do, you can do it on either platform. It's a fairly easy thing to do. All right, I think it's time for another news story, don't you?
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, here we go. Let's talk about iOS bugs for a moment. Apple has squashed a bug in its iOS operating system that made it possible for hackers to impersonate end users who connect to websites that use unencrypted authentication cookies. And there are sadly a lot of those. The vulnerability was the result of a cookie store iOS shared between the Safari browser and a separate embedded browser used to negotiate captive portals that are displayed by many Wi-Fi networks like we get when a user is first joining. Captive portals generally require people to authenticate themselves or agree to terms of service before they can gain access to the network. According to a blog post published by security firm SkyCure, the shared resource made it possible for hackers to create a booby-trapped captive portal and associate it with a Wi-Fi network. When someone with a vulnerable iPhone or iPad connected, it could steal virtually any HTTP cookie stored on the device. According to SkyCure's researchers, this allowed users to steal users' cookies associated with a site of the attacker's choice, which meant that the attacker could then impersonate the victim's identity in the chosen system. It could perform a session fixation attack, which would log the user into an account controlled by the attacker. Because of the shared cookie store, when the victims browse to the affected website via mobile Safari, they'll be logged into the attacker's account instead of their own, which means, let's say you logged into some site and then put in your credit card number. Oops. And of course, they could do a cache poisoning attack on the website, which meant that the attacker's malicious JavaScript could be executed every time the victim's connected to that website in the future, even if they cleared out the problem. So SkyCure researchers privately reported to the vulnerability to Apple in June 2013. It was fixed last week with the release of iOS 9.2.1. That's 2.5 years later. Are you still happy with the security in iOS? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
It's also two major OS updates. So in 2013, we were on OS 7?
Yep.
So they made a new S and they probably made a new S and thought they fixed it.
Well, it's certainly possible, but they never even mentioned it as a possible fix.
Yeah.
You know, 2.5 years, I get that there are vulnerabilities. I'm never going to blame anybody for vulnerabilities. No human being understands anything more complex than a lever. So when you've got 1.5 million lines or 2.5 million or 5 million lines of code in an operating system, I get that there are going to be problems. And you fix them and you move on. That's the important thing. But waiting 2.5 years to fix something, 2.5 years after you were notified of it, it's not like Apple can't afford another programmer. Oh, we just don't have enough people to work on it. Hire somebody! 2.5 years is an unconscionable amount of time to wait to fix a vulnerability as egregious as this one.
One thing that Apple has done recently, I don't remember when they started, when they release a bug fix, they are now naming the people who have reported that bug to them.
Yep.
And thanking them, acknowledging them at least, for reporting that bug.
Google does the same thing, but they also pay the money. So that's nice. All right, our next caller is Will from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Will. What's up?
Oh, when you talk about Linux.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm against Microsoft. I don't know why you keep talking about it all the time. Like, it's the only thing in the world.
We talk about what people call in about.
Yeah.
Well,
right.
Anyhow, when you say Linux, that snows a lot of us, because to me, there's Ubuntu, and Ubuntu is made simple enough for even stupid old people. And you don't, you know, Linux is, there's just a few hundred versions, so you're really saying nothing.
Right. Or you're saying everything. I mean, really, Linux is the underlying thing. Ubuntu is how they've packaged Linux.
Well, if you got a better thing than Ubuntu, then talk about it, but at least.
Yeah, I understand, Will, and I personally agree with you. I'm an ex-Ubuntu user, not an ex-Ubuntu user like I used to use Ubuntu. There is a version of Ubuntu called ex-Ubuntu. It's Ubuntu with an X on the front. Just like there is K-Ubuntu and a bunch of different other versions.
So is that a bigger, as big a religious argument as Mac versus Windows?
Well, and that's
which version of Linux?
That's what I'm getting to. When I say Ubuntu, I get all kinds of people writing me saying, you know, I use Magento and I use Red Hat and you never talk about that. So I just talk about Linux now, because then, you know, for every one person who calls up and says you should be more specific, I get 50 people who are complaining that I didn't talk about their version, their specific version. I've been using Debian since 1924.
Well,
my great-grandfather used Slackware. My uncle used Yggdrasil. I used Yggdrasil.
I'm using BSD, darn it.
I use BSD. And right. Get off my lawn. No, but I agree with you. I do understand what you're saying, Will.
Well, the problem is it's too complicated, too many. I am 81 years old.
God bless you.
Followed the computers all since 1956.
Yep.
And the problem is it's gotten so complicated that I don't even know how to put Ubuntu onto a machine.
Yep, yep.
I took it down to the local tech shop and had paid them $40 for one machine and $75 for another to put it on.
Wow.
Some of the major manufacturers, like Dell, are selling computers pre-installed with Linux. Just like
finding them is hard.
Yeah, yeah, finding because you know most of the PCs now come pre-installed with Windows.
I gave
but
up
you can do it.
Paying people to put it on, so I did talk to Dell and got a $330 computer with it on, and then love it.
Nice. Good for you.
It's a little laptop, and it's. I want the speech that comes with Ubuntu Orca.
Right, right, right. Good product. All right, listen, Will, I'm sorry. We got to take a break.
All right.
But thanks for calling in. We appreciate it. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you, 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member support of Jazz 9.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we're Soundbites. Before we go to the phones again, I just want to say for Will, one of the things that people are doing in rebellion against how complex computers are getting, what with the operating systems themselves and the antiviruses and the this and the that, is they are going to things like Chromebooks and tablets, which are easier for people to use. So You're right, Will. You know, whether you're going to Ubuntu or to the Chrome OS or to iOS on a tablet, people are looking for easier to use. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Greece, New York. Hiya, Dave. What do you need?
Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
I've got a question and a couple quick comments.
Yep.
I have run across SoundCloud, where it automatically starts playing this the audio part. When you go to a website, it automatically starts playing. I've tried to find a block for it. I just hate these things that automatically start playing. Do you guys, are you at all familiar with SoundCloud?
Yes.
And how to stop it from playing?
I know how to stop autoplay videos, but how do you stop?
So SoundCloud is basically just an online audio store or audio playback, kind of like Pandora and Spotify and all the other ones. But the biggest thing that SoundCloud offers is user uploads. So anyone can upload an audio file to SoundCloud. So if you have your own burgeoning band, you can upload it to SoundCloud and then get it distributed from from there. So it's a setting that the other end does. So when they upload the video, they can tell it to autoplay, and we are hoping that everyone stops doing that. It's been a problem on Facebook. Yeah, it's been a problem on Facebook videos for a long time.
Right.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's you can Facebook videos. You can stop the play the next one. I guess you can't stop the autoplay.
Well, what is your browser?
Well, I'm using Chrome right now. I haven't run across it on Mozilla, but I don't spend much time on Mozilla.
All right, in Chrome, if you go to the plugins.
Yeah.
One of the things you can select is whether they run automatically or you have to click to play them.
Right, and that works fine for Flash. I've got it for Flash.
But it doesn't work for...
You have to find the audio plugin. I've found a link here. So there are different types of audio and video, and each one has a different plugin and a different content setting. And so if you go in the content settings, then you can find which line says audio in general, and you might be able to set it there as well.
Right. Which plugin would that be, though? The same one I'm using to block the Flash player?
No, because that only blocks Flash. So you have to find a different audio plugin.
All right.
You may have to... Oh, I don't know. You could view source and try to look at the page and see what plugin SoundCloud uses.
Okay.
It's probably the generic audio plugin.
All right. I'll do some more research along those lines.
Yeah, we'll find that for you. I ran into a customer this week.
Did you heard it?
Boom, boom, boom. His own personal website plays audio as soon as you go to the website, and he wants that to happen. And he's mad that people are blocking it, and he wants to know how to stop people from blocking his audio from playing. And one of the things we ran into is that he's using a very old audio plugin architecture that Safari and Chrome no longer support, the NM API, the old Netscape plugin architecture.
Right.
So Safari and Chrome have already stopped using that plugin. Firefox says they're going to stop using it this year. So any web-based audio that's using an older plugin has to recode their page to go up to HTML5. But the trick is finding out which plugin that is using, or keep your audio muted until you actually want to hear something.
Oh yeah, basically I'm listening to music and suddenly I get this other thing popping up over top of it, and I just, no thank you. A couple comments. People with compatible, there is a compatibility mode that they have in Windows 7, 8, and 10, and I have actually found, even if they don't directly support it, that has worked for almost every program I've tried.
Yeah.
I've got one program that's like 17 years old, and I love it. and compatibility mode allows me to play it.
Right, right, right.
It looks like in Chrome there is a generic plugin section in the content manager where you can say block all plugins or require a click to play that any plugin. So it doesn't. It looks like it's a global setting rather than an individual media content.
So what would I search on that?
Chrome:// Chrome/settings/content. And I'm going to post this link.
Oh, okay. Excellent. And my last comment is a quick one on Linux. I've downloaded Linux Mint. I like it. I just don't understand why you can't do a simple thing like drag and drop a shortcut. It just seems like you've been around long enough. Everybody wants to drag and drop a shortcut.
I agree with you about that, by the way.
You know, the whole world does that. Except
you can, you can right click.
Yeah.
And one of the choices is send to, at least on Ubuntu, one of the choices is send to, and in that section, one of the choices will say desktop, and it becomes actually a shortcut.
I found a website I have to make a bookmark, then I can drag the bookmark to the web to the desktop, and then it'll create a shortcut.
Interesting.
You can't go directly. You have to create the bookmark and then drag the bookmark to the desktop.
You can't do right click send to desktop.
I don't have it launched right now. I don't think so, but I'm not going to say correct on that.
Do me a favor and look it up and let me know.
Okay, Elk.
You're on Mint, right?
Pardon?
You're on
Mint.
I'm on Mint. Yeah, I'd like to know.
Okay, Elk.
Thanks, Dave.
Yep.
Yeah, it's everything works a little differently. And I agree. I would like to be able to make a shortcut.
Yeah, they all have their uniqueness.
Right. The problem with shortcuts is that they can confuse you. I had someone who had thought she was backing up a bunch of stuff to an external drive.
We get that all the time.
And they made shortcuts instead and then threw away the original because what she was doing was cleaning up her hard drive.
Yep. We had a guy bring in like a dozen CDs of 10 years of backups of his Quicken file. It was a shortcut to the Quicken application.
Right.
Not even his Quicken file.
Right, right, right. So sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, and I get that. It's a problem all the way around, though, and I do understand that as well. I'm looking at the content settings, and I'm not seeing. Yeah, run all plugin, detect and run import, and let me choose when to run plugin. I guess that's it.
Yeah, so let me choose when to run plugins. So it's a little different than the picture I found on probably a newer version of Chrome.
Right.
And maybe different because you're on a Chromebook and not the Chrome
browser.
So let me choose what plugins to run. And so there'll be a little either a broken icon or like a Lego brick looking icon. Copyright infringement intended.
Right.
All over your website because ads are typically plugins, a JavaScript plugin or a Flash plugin. And so when you specifically want that thing to play, you have to click on it to make it start playing.
And I think that worked because, in fact, that just killed the whole thing, which is
right. Well, yeah, it'll make most websites look really bad because it'll be full of these blank holes.
Right.
But then there's an exception list so that you can say this plugin is always allowed to run.
Right.
And you don't have to click on it.
What I love is there are websites now where it comes up and says, oh, I see you're using an ad blocker. That's cool, but you should know we make money off of ads. So please, if it's okay, would you unblock our ads?
Mm-hmm.
As long as you don't serve me malware, as long as the ads aren't annoying and obtrusive.
Right, 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 right.
So we need a button that answers back. If you police your ads better, then we will unblock them.
Right. but you go to websites that are, and I have to say most media sites are this way. There's ads everywhere, and in the middle there's a tiny little bit of actual content.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that. If your whole point of having a website is just to serve me ads, I cannot go there. That's easy enough. I don't have a problem with that.
Some news sites are like that. You know, I want to go and see the news, not a zillion ads. So I typically use Google News. I use Google a lot because it's such a simple website. you know, just a search button. You know, Google News is just the news, no ads.
Right.
Unfortunately, Google is the main company selling ads to every other website.
Well, exactly.
So that's why they don't need to put any on their own.
But they do. If you took off your ad blocker, you would see plenty of ads on their site. On the other hand, if you went to rochester.localin1.com for Rochester news, you would only see 4 ads. And they're small and unobtrusive. And if you went to Ask Nick, you would see Google ads. But again, I try to keep them fairly small and unobtrusive. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Chickawaga,
New York.
How is it out there?
It's alternating between sunny and snowy, so.
Yeah.
That sounds like Rochester.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Rochester,
well,
Buffalo.
We're not all that particularly far away. For those who don't know, Cheektowaga is a suburb of Buffalo.
Yeah, you get lake effect off both. East. Yeah, you get lake effect off both the lakes, right? Erie and Ontario?
Maybe a little bit from Ontario when we have north winds, sure.
Yeah.
You know, we can say at least we're not Buffalo. But Buffalonians can say, at least we're not Watertown.
Yeah.
Watertown, they get quite a bit more on average than us folks here right next to Lake Erie.
I have a friend who just sent me some pictures of him as a kid sledding out his second floor window.
Oh, my.
Because the wind.
Like the blizzard of 77 for here.
Yeah, because the wind blew a giant dune of snow up the side of his house. And it was a perfect angle for sledding down.
Yeah, Kathy's originally from there, and I hear some of the stories from there. You know, she grew up there.
Yep.
And it's like, yeah, that whole end of that lake. What was it? Maybe 5-6 years ago, there's a town. If you go straight across Lake Ontario, straight across, not up to Watertown, but straight across, they got like 11 or 12 feet during this one storm.
Yep, yep. My friend Rick used to say, can you see me? Then this is nothing.
Yeah.
What's up?
Oh my.
What's up, Joe?
Well, the one thing a few callers back was asking about, well, should I get an external hard drive and make a disk image before I upgrade? You know, I would suggest everybody should do that, because getting back from Windows 10 to something you had before, like Windows 7, can be problematic at best if you use Microsoft
Dad
for, I don't like Windows 10, take me back.
Right. I'm not a big fan of disk images, but for this one thing, I completely agree with you. You should have a disk image of your Windows 7 machine before you move to Windows 10. Agreed.
It's really simple. How much time do you want to spend fiddling with your computer?
Yeah.
If you take a disk image, that's like, for most disk capacities, you can be up and running within 10 minutes after a total failure.
Right.
Imaging a disk is often a lot faster than a file copy, because it doesn't have to go file by file by file.
Right.
And so imaging is 10 minutes, and a file backup could be an hour.
Right. And a restore similar.
Yeah.
Yep.
A lot of people's backup strategy is to...
Assume the drive will never
take a
die.
Disk image, and then, I'm sorry.
A lot of people's backup strategy is assume the drive will never die.
That sadly is true.
One of the worst ones, but yeah.
I suppose that is a strategy.
That is a strategy. Yes.
They periodically take a disk image and then do intermediate backups. So you know, if their hard drive dies, they can restore their latest disk image to get their operating system and their applications and all that all set. And then they restore from their data backups to get the data since the hard drive, you know, failed.
Yep, and the problem I have with that, which I've said many times before, is that if there is an issue with the registry, you're just propagating that.
Yeah, that is the big downside of disk images, that it takes along all the viruses, all the huge registries, all the dangling registry entries, all that.
Yep, which is why I tell people, if the reason you're doing a restore of your disk image is because Windows is running lousy, then install it clean and move your data back. But you said, of course, and if you're moving to 10, then you definitely want to do that image of 7 ahead of time.
Hang around till after the break.
Please. Yeah, hang on. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Joe from Cheektowaga, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. This is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I wanted to get ahead of that skip. I hate that skip. I hate it. I hate it. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we still have Joe from Cheek.
Cheekawaga, New York.
There you go, on the line. Go ahead, Joe.
Just heard of the forecast and the thinking of the snow.
Yeah.
So those folks down Virginia way around the D.C. area, you know, we get, you know, 4, 5, 6 centimeters around here. We think, oh, what the heck, you know, it's a bit of a chore to shovel.
Yeah.
Those folks around there, they just don't have the infrastructure. Yeah. They don't have the snow plows and whatnot to deal with that. That's why they're having such a tough time with that.
They get inches, we get feet. And
right.
It's about the same thing.
I got to tell you a story. My aunt, who is a typical Italian, an older Italian woman, she probably stands 4.5 feet tall. She may weigh 90 pounds with bricks in her pocket. She moves down to Silver Spring, Maryland. And the first month she's there, there's snow. And it's nothing snow. So she goes to visit her friend. She puts on her coat. She gets in her little Cadillac and she goes off to visit them. Everybody she visited, they were going, oh my God, Rose, how did you get here? How did you get through the blizzard? She looks outside and the snow's not even up to the hubcaps. Yeah. We wouldn't even shovel the driveway for that.
Yeah. Use a broom.
Just run through it.
Yeah, just drive through it. We'll
gun it.
Pack it down. And she said, I didn't understand. They closed the city. She said, I didn't even realize it was snow and they were closing the city. Yeah, absolutely. Because they don't have the infrastructure. Yeah. They don't know what to do when that happens.
I had almost had a terrible accident Friday. I'm turning left into my driveway, and the street I live on, it's a busy street, and we're on a hill, and we're always expecting people to pop up over the top of the hill and hit you. So I'm turning left, and the people coming up behind me always try to scoot around.
Yeah.
But there's no shoulder left because of the snow. And so we hear a thud as we pull into our driveway. Matthew said, what was that? Oh, they probably hit the neighbor's mailbox. I've lost my mailbox 2 or 3 times. This year.
Yeah.
Well, last year now. And so we get out of the car and there's 3 cars in the road with their flashers on. So the guy that tried to go around me apparently decided he couldn't fit and stopped. The guy behind him hit him. The guy behind him hit him.
Wow.
3 in a row. And before before the cops get there, this 4th car coming up the hill, so this is up the hill.
Yeah.
Isn't stopping. And so we're all waving our arms, you know, stop, you idiot. You're going to hit the parked cars that are already there. And then someone pops up over the hill.
Yep.
I can see the tracks in my yard where someone lost control and had to scoot around someone, missed my mailbox this time. Thank God.
Yay.
I know, the mailboxes don't cost much, but to do it that often.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Go ahead.
Why don't you put your mailbox on a concrete pylon?
I knew a guy that did that. He was mad about the snowplow getting his mailbox all the time. So he got a steel mailbox, you know, melded it to an I-beam and sunk it in concrete, chipped the plow.
Yep.
And the company sent him a bill for the plow.
Yep.
So if the plow hits your mailbox, at least that's what I've heard here in town. If a snowplow hits your mailbox, call the highway department and they'll fix it for you.
Right.
And apparently the reverse is true. If your mailbox hits the plow,
right,
you pay for the fix the plow.
But what we need for our mailboxes is either springs or we need to actually suspend them from something.
Yeah.
Put a real high thing up and suspend the mailbox in it.
I've seen those as a joke where there's one 30 feet in the air that says airmail.
Yeah, right.
Well, they also have ones that are like a big, hook.
Yep.
They're far enough off the road and they like arch up and come over and they hang maybe about 4 foot off the road, you know, up off the road.
Yep. Yeah.
But they're like 6 or 8 feet farther
back.
Off.
I like the ones now that they have a door on the back so you can get the mail without walking out onto the shoulder.
Yep.
That's nice.
Ooh,
yeah, that's a good idea, actually. All right.
Well, to bring it back to technology.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Well, the technology of a mailbox has grown over the years.
That's true.
Indeed. See,
back in the olden days, the postman would walk up to the house and hand it to you. My grandfather would.
Just three or four times a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can remember twice a day.
Yep. Me too. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Joe.
Just because you installed Linux Mint doesn't mean you have to use the, let's see, what do they use for Mint? They use the Mate desktop?
You can use Mate or the other one, which I forget what it's called.
Or GNOME. See, the thing is, chances are, in your distribution, you have several desktops. You can put them all on, and the login program you use will typically have a drop-down saying, oh, do I want a GNOME desktop? Do I want a Mate desktop? Do I want an XFCE desktop? And right. so on and so forth. So you don't have to restrict yourself to just what was installed by default. You could put XFCE on there and log in and have an XFCE session.
Right.
And you can go one further than that. You don't have to use the Mint file manager. You could, for example, put on Thunar or
right.
Thunar. I don't know how it's pronounced, but
yeah, I don't either.
You could put on that file manager, and you can probably put shortcuts all over the place to your heart's content, because I know for a fact that's. Well, you said you're running Zubuntu, right?
Right.
Yeah, so am I, so I know what you're talking about. They have the Sentoo, and then it says desktop as shortcut.
Right.
So chances are you could try putting on Thunar and use that to browse your files, and then you can make shortcuts that way by dragging and dropping.
Right, exactly. And the other one is called Cinnamon, by the way. So it's Mate and Cinnamon.
Right.
Yeah. All right, excellent.
All right. Thank you for your time, gentlemen.
No, thank you. Have fun. Yeah, he's right. The beauty about Linux is that it is almost infinitely malleable.
Yeah.
Do whatever you need to do.
And I just found a mailbox that is on a rotatable spring.
There you go.
So when someone comes along and hits it, it rotates out of the way and rotates back for the mailman.
Right. And if they hit the post, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, the post. Yeah. So they got to put the whole post on a spring.
But, right. All right. Our next caller is Bob from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Bob. What's up?
Hello there. I just wanted to first say thank you for the best advice I ever got regarding computers to get a Chromebook.
There you go.
It's just fantastic. Plus, I love your book, by the way, which I got on Amazon.
Thank you. I have a book on Amazon, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, I just noticed that all of a sudden, all of the other call-in shows like Leo Laporte, et cetera, they're all starting about six months to a year later than you guys were suggesting Chromebooks to say. Mm-hmm. Get Chromebooks. They're the best things on the market. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Leo, are you listening?
Yeah.
Did you get that idea from us? Have us on your show.
Well, I don't know if he did or what, but I'll tell you, he's singing their praises every show you listen to now.
Yeah, I can't tell you how much I love my Chromebook. I just, it's the thing I go to first, unless I'm going to do specific desktop things, or unless I get up at 3 a.m. to do something and my eyes are so half asleep that I need that giant monitor. I go to my Chromebook because it's just easier, faster. It's right there. Everything is easy.
And not to mention they're relatively cheap compared to everything else.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, when I went to Arizona over Christmas to visit my daughter. She's in graduate school, going for her PhD. I'm very proud of her. But I took my Chromebook. And at one point, our luggage got lost. And honestly, I simply didn't care. I had what amounts to a $200 laptop, and that was when it was brand new 4 years ago. It's certainly, it owes me nothing at this point.
Sure.
So I had this $200 four-year-old laptop. All I did when I got home was I actually waited a day, but I could have just changed my password. I changed them regularly anyway, but I could have just changed my password, and be done. But, the luggage came to us the next day, and there was my Chromebook. But so what? There was nothing on the Chromebook.
Right.
Everything that is on the Chromebook is encrypted. And unless you have my password and, oh, by the way, my phone, because I do two-factor authentication, you can't get into my stuff.
Right. That's just amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, thank you for mentioning that. And the fast question I have is regards to, you guys have an opinion regards to Apple or iTunes Match? Because I'm so confused by all these services now, and Google's got that wonderful Google Music, but I'm wondering if it's worth $25 a year to get.
In the minute we have left, if you have all of your music already in iTunes, it's probably the easiest way to work. But if you are also buying music from Amazon and Google and the other services, then Google Play is often a little easier. The Google Play Music is often a little easier and includes YouTube Red.
All right. I'm sorry. We've got to quit. Sorry. Thanks for listening. It was Sound Bites with Dave, Steve, Nick. It's 55 minutes after the hour. See you next week in 166 hours. Thanks for listening.